If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of the work of Triple H.
We want to SmackDown.
He is Wei Ting. I am John Pollock, and tonight we are talking about Friday Night SmackDown in its 3+ hour format, which we just had a big discussion on the XL version, that it looks like the 3-hour format, it's standing still for the time being, which is really, that to me, is the night the line was crossed.
Oh boy, yes, certainly. I'm sorry, I'm just kind of, we don't know that it's official yet, so maybe there's still like a, 5% of wishful thinking that...
Do you really think we're going to get Joe Tessitore on camera saying, guess what, folks? We're staying at this... It's just, I don't think it's going to be something they're going to actively make a big deal out of.
Well, no, they will be celebrating the fact that we get to keep this show 3 hours. Aren't we all happy about it?
It's what we call a pure play.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I think it's here to stay, John.
XL edition of Rewind to SmackDown. Folks, this is where we go through all of the news beyond SmackDown's fate. We also went through Mariah May looks to be WWE bound. Vince McMahon has a name for his brand new company. What are the odds for success? Some very interesting antitrust lawsuits filed against the UFC. We break those down with some analysis of that as well. Saturday night's main event, it did a tremendous number. Best of the Super Juniors, the final is coming up on Sunday. All of that can be found on the XL edition. And we talk about this XL edition, and it's hard to describe to people the immense joy we get going before and after the show review. So this Monday, folks, it's open house here at Post Wrestling. We are going to give a free edition of Rewind to Raw, start to finish. You will get XL'd on Monday night on our live YouTube channel.
Oh, be prepared to get XL'd.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that sound good?
Sounds like a bad finisher from like the mid-2000s. Yeah. But yes,
but that means we're going to go live right after for everybody on youtube.com/postwrestling. And on our free feeds as well, you will get the full edition of these shows, from our news of the day discussions to our show reviews to our feedback. And I think we should even do it ad-free, just to give people a glimpse. That way we could even include timestamps for the free edition as well.
Let's do it. Let's do it. All right. Yes, we're going to have a very busy week next week. I should double check with you. We are going live Wednesday night. That's the plan?
After the 4-hour block? Yes. Yeah, I think that's the plan. Yeah.
Okay, so Fyter Fest, we will be going live at midnight. Mm-hmm. Dear God. Yeah. If you're not a fan of me after long shows, I don't know if that's the one for you, but we will be live on Wednesday night. Also want to just circle back to Thursday because we did put out the latest Rewind Away, and way we went back 31 years. What are we discussing this week on Rewind Away?
We went back 30 years to talk about the oldest edition of ECW television that I've ever seen. So old that it was not even extreme. It was an Eastern Championship Wrestling. This infamously now known as the night the line was crossed, a 60-minute triple threat match between Shane Douglas, Sabu, and Terry Funk, a match that I think has historically been credited as one of the things that put ECW on the map among, you know, certainly tape traders and maybe people in the greater wrestling discussion. So it was very interesting for me to just see ECW in this early incarnation, including very, very, very early incarnations of Tommy Dreamer, suspenders and all, the Sandman, without a surfboard, but with a wetsuit, and the Tasmaniac.
The Tasmaniac, yeah. The original Sheik. And, you know, you look at this logo, you would think that the only line that was crossed was from the E to the W, but this was, boy, this was bare bones ECW in February of 1994, but a certain charm to it as well. I think we had double digits of people that bled on this show. So yes, there is an undercard to this, but the primary focus is the three-way dance, a very legendary match in ECW's history. And with that, a big look at ECW in early 1994, the lead up to this show and what came out after this. But if you're going to pick a year that I would say Sabu was kind of just the sensation of pro wrestling, 1994 is probably on your short list of those years where he was just so key to ECW establishing itself as what it would become. So it's a very interesting snapshot, especially this is a more so the before pictures for a lot of these performers. All right, on to SmackDown we go from the Thompson Bowling Arena in Knoxville, Tennessee. 14,556, according to WrestleTix. And tonight, SmackDown, avoiding the NBA and the NHL. No games tonight, so they were in the clear. Bianca Belair makes her return here in her hometown of Knoxville. Her fingers are still in a splint, so she did note she is not at 100% yet. But being that she is here from Knoxville, off the top, they play Rocky Top, which is the fight song for the University of Tennessee. And this was a great start to this show. This crowd was so into this. And I mean, it made sense of having Bianca on this show, even though it would seem that I don't know if she's going to be wrestling in the immediate future, but it seems like
I'm sure close. Well, I mean, the timing of Knoxville certainly made sense, but I have to think she's close to being ready if they're going to, you know, jump so deep into an active feud in storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, it was like she's been out like over a month now since WrestleMania. It's like these fingers have to be like really messed up or whatnot. I could certainly see like she's a character, at least for now, and wrestles hopefully in a few weeks. You would think she's ready to come back.
Yeah. I also think that, though, if you're going to you never want to have any sort of injury as a wrestler, of course. But if you're going to take time off, having it come after like what has been discussed as the best match coming off of WrestleMania weekend after you've done like that sort of long-term storytelling is really the best time for somebody to take that time off. And hopefully like just, you know, with a bad finger, it's not going to prevent her from like enjoying some of the things that maybe we want, you know, people to enjoy with some time off. So, yeah.
She says that here at home, it's her safe space. She points to her family sitting in the front row and what she's been going through, losing friends, losing the tag titles, and losing my first match at WrestleMania. And she's working to get back to 100% physically, and she gets interrupted by Naomi, who gets a ton of heat from this crowd. All she wants is to talk to Bianca. She wants to fix this and wants Belair's forgiveness. And then notes, when I got here to Knoxville, I went by your parents' house, but no one was there. And they cut to the parents who have no idea what she's talking about. So she
was kind of laughing, actually, at this.
She casually notes that she just let herself into the home and started going through a photo album and seeing Bianca smiling in those photos. This was half creepy, half totally comedic. We just had a random break and entering scenario admitted to on live television.
I mean, I think it was meant to be creepy. Would you laugh at if I told you I went to your parents' house and looked through your childhood photos? Would you? That's not funny.
Yeah, I wouldn't laugh. You're right. I wouldn't. I thought she was going to play a video here, but I guess that was not. This felt like a lot to
theater of the mind, you know.
Okay. Well, Bel Air says, you betrayed my trust, and if you come near my family again, what you did to Jade will be nothing compared to what I do to you. And Naomi, there's like tears forming, and then she has this change in her face, and she's pissed, and says, it wouldn't be good for Bianca if both you and your mom were in a wheelchair. And the crowd is like, was that really necessary? I guess so. Jade comes out and attacks Naomi, and then Naya's out, and that takes us to our opening qualifier.
I thought this was a really good opening segment, you know? It was a really good hometown address from Bianca, first and foremost. You know, again, these post-mania breaks, again, maybe not exactly what somebody would wish for due to injury, but I think that it's been helpful for Bianca. Like, we're talking about a Bianca Belair that I think even leading up to WrestleMania, she was perhaps contending with an audience feeling a little bit burnt out with her at the top and maybe even booing her, you know, in comparison to like an Io Sky, for instance. I think the time away has made us miss her, and therefore I think it's making this babyface return perhaps a more likely to succeed. I think Naomi, unfortunately, has been in a little bit of a holding pattern since WrestleMania, and that primarily is because she lost her dance partner in Bianca Belair. As integral as Jade is to like her story, the heart of the story really is her relationship with Bianca Belair, and I'm so glad to see that they're able to pick this up back up now. I think like playing this sort of stalker role is just, I love it for her. She just has this incredible ability to like evidently shed tears on command, and we saw it in that like promo package way back, but now we got to see it in a live setting, and it was actually very, very impressive. So to see her go from that to just all of a sudden being angry and cracking that great line about like putting Bianca into a wheelchair like her mom, I thought this was a really great showing from Naomi. So I'm enjoying all of this like soap opera stuff, and it immediately makes her, like Naomi and Bel Air, feel like they're in hot programs again.
It wouldn't be the first time in Naomi's WWE career she lost her dance partner.
That's right. Yeah. Cameron. We'll always have Ariane. Was that her name? Ariana?
Ariane.
Ariane. Yes. Yeah. We'll always have her and Vinny.
Vinny. That was his name. Yeah. Naomi, Jade Cargill, and Nia Jax. So Jax did quite a lot here, especially coming off the second rope with a leg drop, and she missed Jade with an avalanche, instead took out Naomi, and then it's Naomi with the split-legged moonsault onto Jax, and then pops up into Jaded, and it's Jax making the save, so we're getting all these saves. Jax executes a Tower of Doom, and then Naomi gets out of the way as she is stacked on top of Jade from an annihilator. So Jax comes down on top of Jade, and with Naomi out of the way, she uses a crucifix to catch Nia Jax for the pin. So Naomi joins Alexa Bliss, Roxanne Perez, Rhea Ripley, and Julia with the final spot to be determined on Monday that we will get to.
I feel the match turned out really well, a lot stronger than I expected. And for me, it was because they crafted some really strong three-way sequences with some great near falls. And like with many of the three-ways for this Money in the Bank series, they all have like a really strong pace of action, and it continues to show me like how much WWE have figured out like the formula for these sort of matches. So lots of credit to the design of the match, and lots of credit to these three for the execution, including I thought like a finish with this bonsai drop that I thought turned out really well. Jade was the lone babyface here, and I thought she came across well. Like, good comebacks, got the crowd behind her. I also continue to be impressed by Naya's sense of urgency and her just, you know, ability to like feel like she smells blood in the water and just kind of goes for the kill. I think that's been like the biggest difference maker to me of her run presently versus her run in the past. So I was entertained by this match.
Yeah, and this women's match is shaping up to be very strong for next week with the talent that you have in it so far. R-Truth is speaking to Little Jimmy as the Bloodline enter. Truth looks at JC Mateo and asks if he is Solo Sikoa's son and wants to face him tonight. Fatu tells Sikoa and Mateo he's got his own stuff to take care of. See you later. Bye. The Secret Hervis is with Nick Aldis, and Green is desperately hiding her face, and it reveals that she has a face mask on to protect her broken nose. She wants Zelina Vega suspended and her title returned to Green. But Aldis says to Green, "You are not medically cleared, and I'm not doing anything about Vega." So Green then volunteers Alba Fire to face Zelina Vega, and that match is made for later tonight because we've got an open hour of programming to fill.
And we will for quite some time. So, yeah, Nick Aldis can...
Nick Aldis is... he now has no excuse.
So, I mean... I wonder if they would have like added any sort of makeup to Chelsea to like heighten the bruising on this nose, but maybe they didn't have to because this looked like a very legitimate broken nose to me. And
yeah, it's hard to tell. They were doing the unmasking spot later. I thought the same thing as you, but it's hard to know. Like she broke her nose. We do. Oh, know yeah. That, so
and for a heel like her, again, you never want to be injured, but like if you're going to break any body part, like maybe a broken nose is like the best gift that you could have for a heel of her type, because these sort of face mask gimmicks, like they always tend to work really well for them, right? So
I like this idea where they have the little Chelsea Green signs here, and after they did the unmasking, my thought is that whether it's Zelina Vega or one of the baby faces, they need to get like 1,000 of these with the broken nose and hand them out to people. And Ooh. That can be what they hold up for Chelsea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
It's June on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are going through tons of your questions on the Ask Away Mailbag Show, and we're bringing you not one, but two editions of Rewind Away, including a review of the Katsuyori Shibata documentary, California Dreamin', covering his time as head trainer at the LA Dojo. Plus, Karen and Bruce have you covered for New Japan Dominion. Chris from LA has chosen another musical edition of Rewind Away to join Wei Ting and Nate Milton. Plus, we have extended editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown coming at you every single week, along with all of your weekly favorites. It's postwrestlingcafe.com. Saxton is with Tiffany Stratton and asks her about Money in the Bank. You won last year. Now you're going to be on the other side. And she says, anyone that cashes in on me, that would be a big mistake. Naomi walks in, says, I'm going to win and cash in whenever I feel like it. And then Alexa says, you shouldn't worry about Naomi. You should worry about me. All we needed was a Money in the Bliss comment to end this segment. So not a whole lot here.
Just to remind you of the SmackDown participants in the Money in the Bank.
Yes. That was Tiffany Stratton's contribution tonight. R-Truth and JC Mateo. So Truth just does his Cena spots, and then Mateo stops a slam by flipping on top and hits a standing moonsault, misses the senton, and after the five-knuckle shuffle, Truth tries for the AA, but Cobb collapses on top of Truth and wins with the Tour of the Islands. And that was that. They continue their attack. Jimmy Uso runs down with a chair, saving R-Truth. And then Sokoa pulls off JC Mateo, who wants to go after Jimmy Uso. So the idea here is Solo does not want Mateo going after Jimmy Uso.
No. Yeah. Because they want to recruit him. Yeah. So Yeah, JC Mateo is still in the process of like needing to be introduced. So I guess like that's where Truth comes in, so that you could showcase JC Mateo. The whole like wanting to recruit Jimmy storyline, I don't think it does that much for Solo Sikoa and their bloodline. I feel like they should, you know, there's just something about the group where if they're not facing against a babyface that feels hot enough, they also feel somewhat irrelevant. So anyway, but I'll see. Let's see if like, you know, Jimmy Uso and Big Jimmy and Little Jimmy could really get an interesting sort of comedic pairing in there. That's really the biggest reason why I see like, you know, R-Truth being paired with him.
Well, that's quite the trajectory of where things are going.
Yeah.
Street Profits are out, and Montez Ford calls this the greatest tag division on any brand in any promotion, and we're leading the charge. And then Way's ringtone went off. It's Fraxium. They kept the theme for week two.
Smashing them, cracking them, body count tall, we stacking them. I love it. It's my favorite new theme song.
It sounds like a Saturday morning show you would watch on NBC.
I think that was the intent. Like, they're trying to make them sound like the Power Rangers theme or something. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Hang time.
Yeah.
So, Fraxium doesn't think they got a fair shake last week because of the Wyatt Six interfering. Prophet said, well, we had you beat, and Fraser wants a rematch. So out come the Machine Guns. They state, if your logic is you were never beaten by the Prophets, then we deserve a shot too. Then DIY come out, where Candice LeRae is doing all the talking, calling them nerds. Saban tells her to shut up, and Ciampa cuts off Gargano when he brings up the Wyatts, stating we will never talk about them. You have all killed the tag division. We want a moment of silence for the division. And the lights go out, the Wyatts appear, laying out everyone, ending with a Sister Abigail onto Nathan Frazier as they were racking them and stacking them.
So a lot of people want the tag titles, and I'm guessing we're getting our next whiteboard tournament from Nick Aldis.
This is the build for the ladder match the night before WrestleMania next year.
Right.
After. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Los Garza against NXT's Javon Evans and Rey Fénix. So this is the backdrop for Worlds Collide. They brought in Ethan Page to do commentary here. Evans bounces off the top into his head scissors on Berto, sending him out of the ring. They get the heat on Evans for a long time. Then Fénix gets the tag, and Garza lands a slingshot powerbomb to Evans for a two count. Fénix then stops Los Garza in the corner from sending Evans off, and it's Evans with a swan dive to the floor. Page then shoves Fénix into Evans, so Evans super kicks Page, and Evans goes for his Red Dawn and barely connected here with Berto. He then climbs to the top. Page shoves him off, and this leads to the MTY onto Evans as Garza gets the cover. 12 minutes and 17 seconds that they went with all four of these on the Worlds Collide card next week.
I thought it was mostly a strong match here, and I think a very good main roster preview debut for Javon Evans. He, at least in ring, feels very main roster ready, but I mean, at such a young age, I think more time in developmental is probably a good idea for reasons even beyond just, you know, his abilities, right?
I think he needs a good, like, a year down there at least.
Yeah,
like,
there's no rush.
You can watch this match. It's like you can see, like, there's, you have all the time in the world with this guy. He could be someone very special, and I would not be rushing him.
Yeah, exactly. Fénix, I mean, listen, like, I think crafting the hot tag around him proved to be a good idea last week. But tonight, man, unfortunately, this was not the best night for Rey Fénix, where he screwed up in a couple of spots there. And, you know, that plus, like, being overshadowed by this, like, shiny new toy and Javon Evans, I did not think it was a great night for Rey Fénix.
He did the spot where he leaped off the back to go do a Rana, and this Rana just was just, it was totally off, yeah.
And then the spinning back kick was off as well, you know, and he didn't really have that much else to do in the show, so that's kind of the only impression you're left with, but it's only one night, you know, so, yeah.
Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett are on camera, and the screen glitches, so we cut to Uncle Howdy, who says, we won't stop, not until we get what's owed. Maybe they're behind on pay.
Oh no, class action lawsuit?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, they want okay. they want injunctive relief.
Imagine the Wyatt Six, like, you know, being called to the stand.
I would love it.
Yeah.
That would be an absolutely great utilization of the Wyatt Six.
Great skit, yeah. All right.
Zelina Vega against Elba Fire, non-title match.
I can't remember the last time Alba Fyre had a singles match on TV or any match on TV. It feels like it's been quite a while.
Did you know Zelina Vega is small?
It's the only thing I know about her.
Yeah. In this match, she was referred to by Joe Tessitore at the beginning as the undersized underdog. 2 minutes later, Wade Barrett tells us, you know, I don't want to say it, but I'll say it. She's undersized. Then Joe Tessitore describes her as diminutive, scrappy. I'm like, how much more can we just shine a light? She's small. No. She's small.
Yeah. Like, okay, so I know like we would associate a lot of these things with maybe a Vince McMahon style of like production, but it's clear there's something in that company where like
she's Shorty V.
Shorty Z, whatever. Like this can still happen, you know? Like we and it's strange because Zelina is somebody who's been around their system for a long time. We've seen sort of the scope of her talents. She's much more than just somebody who's supposed to be small. Yet, like, week after week, this seems to be the only thing that we're being pushed about her is the fact that she's smaller. She's not even that much smaller than most of the competitors. Is she that much smaller than an Alexa Bliss, for instance?
No, it'd be comparable. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing with her, you know?
Vega's selling the shoulder and then counters with a stun dog, misses a moonsault onto Elba, so Fyre lands a swanton, and Green removes the face mask and goes to hit Vega with it, who ducks, so she nails Piper with the face mask. Vega then runs Elba into Chelsea on the apron and hits the code red for the win. And the idea that she nailed Chelsea in her broken nose without the face mask on, and they were teasing that now Niven's got a broken nose too, so...
A whole team of people with face masks. That would be funny. Yeah, I thought there was no heat for this match at all. And no,
there was this whole second half of the show. It was very down.
I can't really blame Alba Fyre because like she's barely a presence on the show, so she's almost like an unknown at this point. But like for somebody like Zelina, who's received pretty consistent airtime as champion, I think they really continue to struggle to have the crowd connect to her. And man, it's just the whole interest in this U.S. title feud so far has been reliant on Chelsea Green still, you know, and credit to her for like never showing sort of this like unwillingness to look ridiculous in service of the character. And I thought she was very funny here, but aside from this, the segment would have pretty much died without her.
Carmelo Hayes and Miz are in the locker room. Miz is telling him how much he sacrificed for Hayes and says, we will be Mr. Money in the Bank. Hayes says, what do you mean, we? He appreciates what Miz has done, but I'm the one who goes out and runs the play. There's no one better than me, and you need to let me be him.
Yeah, so the most tension, I guess, we've had between the two since their team-up. I hope it really means they're finally pivoting him away from Miz.
The lineup for next week, they list Worlds Collide is at 3 Eastern on YouTube. The Money in the Bank countdown show is at 5 o'clock. I cannot imagine Worlds Collide will be over in 2 hours, but maybe.
Five matches. I could see it for
it could,
a YouTube
it
special.
Could. It's also not the end of the world, pardon the pun, if it overlaps with the countdown. And then Money in the Bank is on
How could it, though, if they're both on YouTube?
You can have dual streams.
You could. I just don't see them doing it. You know,
it might be over in 2 hours. It might. Then we had our first Julia video package and she got the subtitles. She had one goal in Japan: to be indisputable. She wants people, regardless of whether they love or hate her, know that she is impossible to deny. Opponents don't matter. They are only a means to build my legacy. I will conquer everything. Who is going to stop me?
Mm-hmm. So most of this, like 96% of this promo was in her speaking English with like the last line in Japanese. And I think like she did well delivering a full English promo for like somebody were like at her level. The problem is how inauthentic the words feel coming out of her mouth. Like it's obvious, like we know these aren't really her words and they're probably written by like a white guy, you know, for her. And I think it's okay for practice, but I think there's a problem when you're using the same script that you would use for any character as you would for somebody who's completely or relatively new to the language. It just doesn't feel real. And in wrestling, I think ultimately that's what you want the most. So I think somebody at her level always comes across better delivering most of the promo in her native tongue with the subtitles, followed by like a little bit of English, you know, put in there. That's a formula that I think that's really worked well for like Io Sky, for instance. But at this point, I also know that they just want to give her practice. And I guess this was fine for that.
One day I'm just going to text you this, but I'm going to use my own, I'm going to personalize it for myself. I'm just going to randomly send you this and say, "Wei, when I grew up in North York, I had one goal. I just wanted to be indisputable. And you can love me or hate me, Wei, but I want you to know I'm impossible to deny. And other podcasters don't matter. They're only a means for you and I to build post-wrestling, and we're going to conquer everything. Who's going to stop us?"
Well, you make a great point, like with that, John, because no matter how good somebody is at speaking English, it's impossible to make those words sound realistic. But maybe that was the bigger problem.
But then we had the follow-up. Oh, Zelina Vega is walking backstage, and Julia's just hanging out, and this man at the far end wondered if there was going to be some kind of a scuffle going on as he was sitting back and reading a magazine, and Julia says, "I see you, but I see that title more." Like, what the hell does that mean?
She's staring more at the title than her, because she's so small, of course. You know,
is she going to cash in on this title? Is she getting ahead of herself here?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it does kind of telegraph Julia's chances at the Money in the Bank by her already being linked to Zelina here. And yes, like, this is the direction we expected after the qualifier. She pinned Zelina, so we knew at some point she'd probably go for the U.S. title. But to do this interaction this early, to me, does spoil the Money in the Bank just a little bit.
I would have saved this.
Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Damian Priest came out, got a black eye, and said that after beating Drew, it's like breathing in fresh air. We went to war for a year, and I gave him a concerto, walked out, and put his ass in the past. And I still can't stand his ass, but I do appreciate that the warrior version of Drew showed up, not the guy who hides behind his phone. He says, "Now I'm coming for championships." And he says, "You know who I'm going for." And he puts the mic out. Dude, there wasn't a whisper of anybody here. I didn't know he was talking. I thought he was like trying to get the yeets going here. He's like, "You all know who it is. Jacob Fatu." I'm like, no, that one caught me off guard. I was not expecting Jacob.
I mean, logically, it does make sense.
It does make sense.
Who else? Who are the other champions on the show that he could possibly be going for? But yeah, interestingly,
I didn't think Brand would stop him here. But I mean, what are you even like yelling to signal Jacob Fatu? You're just, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, he says he's proud
going for Zelina Vega.
"I see you, Zelina, but I see that title more." So he says he is proud of Jacob Fatu, and that's real. Not this other bullshit. Now I'm going to get back to my written promo. He says, "I don't respect your crew, and one day we're going to meet in the ring." And then he takes up this. I'm belittling this, but this was actually a very good promo from Damian Priest.
I guess it was. It just sounds so much more enjoyable coming out of your mouth.
That's like this, and that's real. It's like, okay, we should be in the character, in the moment of the character. Everything you say should feel authentic. So he walks to the back as Jacob comes out for his match, and they have a brief stare down, and then the two acknowledged one another.
So coming off of like Saturday, I thought they were going in two directions, one being Drew being a babyface, and I thought Drew's Priest's promo here kind of confirms that, you know, putting over Drew and his warrior spirit, not being the same guy who tormented him all these months. Seems evident that Drew is going to be turned into a babyface. I thought they were going for a double turn with Priest going as heel as well. This promo did not seem to indicate that at all, but if he was already getting booed, or at least not getting cheered with Drew McIntyre, how does this guy stand any chance getting cheered next to Jacob Fatu? That's just...
I think they're slow rolling this one. I thought that exact same thing. This was scripted as a very, like, your badass baby face, but in a match with Jacob Fatu, I think they know exactly what they're doing. And I think that it's like, if the crowd goes that way, we are ready for it. And I think it's a direction that they want. Like, look at the way Jacob Fatu is booked. He's about to take on Andrade and Carmelo Hayes. He was the baby face in this match. And certainly, he pretty much is a baby face in every presentation. And that will be the case with Damian Priest too. And it's a match that I think people are looking forward to with these two.
I like it. Yeah.
This could be Saudi Arabia, maybe. It's not TV. Those are your options.
The streets, from the streets to Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabian street fight.
Yes.
So it's Jacob Fatu, Andrade, and Carmelo Hayes in a qualifier. This was the beginning of the third hour, so they had 20 minutes. Get used to this. Wade Barrett reminds us of Andrade and Carmelo Hayes and their best of seven series last year, and ends it by saying, "There wasn't a satisfying end to that." I mean, how silly does that sound? A best of seven series that didn't have a satisfying end to it. Like, it's designed to be very cut and dry.
Yeah. Pretty silly.
Yeah. The Stanley Cup final, it didn't have a satisfying ending at the end. We didn't have a winner last year. So the crowd is chanting for Fatu. Hayes looked really good in this match. I thought, like, that he got time and he had two opponents like that really based well for, you know, just his La Mystica and you and Andrade. That, I mean, this was, when was the last time we got like a match of this length with Andrade as well? So early on in the match, Fatu sends The Miz into the barricade and hits him with a running hip attack, which eliminated The Miz. He was gone for the rest of this match. This was the deadly hip attack. Then, after a poison Rana by Carmelo sends Fatu to the floor, Fatu gets up and he runs at Andrade and Carmelo, who both sidestep, and Fatu crashes through this timekeeper's area. And if you watch this, I just could not imagine mentally knowing that these people are going to be moving and I'm going to sprint into this wall. This guy went at an alarming speed into this barricade. I could not believe how hard he charged into this thing. I had to rewind it.
It was impressive. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they're a different breed.
Fatu returns. He's back to life. Misses the springboard moonsault. And then he is hit with nothing but net. Andrade stops him. And we're just going into spinning elbows from Andrade. First 48 from Hayes. Then an impaler is hit by Andrade. Onto Andrade. And Fatu goes for the springboard moonsault when Sokoa and Mateo have shown up. And they get on the apron. Sokoa calls for another moonsault from Jacob Fatu. Then Jimmy Uso appears, attacking Mateo, and Hayes knocks Fatu into Solo Sokoa, then hits him with the first 48. So Fatu lands on the floor, but then Hayes turns around and he is hit with The Message. Yeah. And Andrade pins Carmelo in 20 minutes and 27 seconds. So our Money in the Bank match has LA Knight, Rollins, Solo Sokoa, Penta, Andrade, and one more to qualify.
Mm-hmm. Very hot match, really strong action. And, you know, we could joke about this endless Andrade-Melo feud, but these two did have tremendous in-ring chemistry, and that was replicated in this three-way. Jacob continues to be one of the most charismatic guys on this entire roster. So this kind of surprised me, you know, seeing Andrade be the one to win the qualifier. Like, he is perhaps the coldest character in this Money in the Bank match, but maybe we can hope for something to come out of this match to springboard him into maybe a deeper feud with Santos, as maybe has been, or something involving Phoenix or something like that.
Backstage, LA Knight does a whole promo about the term punching your ticket. And he says that this is his third year in a row being in Money in the Bank, and explains some might think that Rollins is the veteran in this match. That's not true. And quote, "When you've done this 33 years in a row," I was like, "You're not that old, LA Knight." Aleister Black.
What is he referring to?
He misspoke. He meant to say 3 years in a row, but he said 33 years in a row.
Oh, okay.
Yes. All right. Aleister Black walks in and says, "That win was partially mine. You're welcome, though."
Yeah.
Cool.
I guess we can't really say that much about this Aleister Black run so far, but like, is it, I don't know.
Yeah, I can't say much about it. It's been a month, and I can't say there's anything that's really jumped out at me over it.
He, it doesn't, so does it seem like he's moved on from Miz and Mello? Or is that still happening?
I feel we'll revisit that at some point. I mean,
yeah, maybe.
I mean, he was pivoted here to LA Knight, but yeah, I can't say anyway, he's felt
somewhat like underwhelming so far, but it's still early.
So the ad for Raw aired, and so we got the announcement. It'll be CM Punk, AJ Styles, and El Grande Americano in a Money in the Bank qualifier. That sounds like oddly interesting for Monday. Yeah.
Sounds great.
Outside of this year's Royal Rumble, this is the first time Punk and AJ, who have not always seemed to be always the best of comrades, this will be their first time having a match together since 2004 for IWA Mid-South.
Wow.
This is kind of amazing, wild to me. Like,
how old was Javon Evans?
He was born like a few months before that match. He would have been like 5 months old or something like that. 5 or 6 months old.
Amazing. Wow.
And the women's match is Liv Morgan, Ivy Nile, and the latest addition to the Raw roster, Stephanie Vaquer. So that is our first call up, and I don't think it's going to be our last.
No, they made it official on social media, so like it seemed like they were in a rush to put Stephanie Vaquer up there, and we could make, I think, a pretty solid assumption that she's going to win this. Wouldn't you say, John?
Like, I'd be very surprised, because I imagine that this is going to be like Roxanne Perez or Raquel Rodriguez screwing this up for Liv. Probably Raquel, because they're kind of like leaning towards like Raquel being at odds with Liv. I would see absolutely no purpose to be putting Stephanie into this match if she's not winning. It just would make no sense.
Yeah, so it seems like they're really fast tracking her, and it makes me wonder when that decision was made, because it feels very, very sudden.
Oh, this is more like this feels like, you know, a move you would see years ago where it was just like, just drop her cold turkey from one brand and boom, thrown into the other. But I mean, she's coming up in theory with like a push, but man, there's a lot of people that they're trying to introduce on both shows. Like, we're talking about an Aleister Black, like there's a lot of these names, and there's going to be more of them. Fatu is livid backstage. He's destroying everything. Sokoa says he was just trying to help, and Fatu says, for the last time, I do not need your help, and he leaves Mateo and Solo Sokoa. So that's going to blow up. Worlds Collide rundown. No listing of a title match between Chad Gable and El Hijo del Vikingo.
Must have been a mistake on Monday.
Do you know how much coverage this got? Like, this got covered in like big news sources in Mexico, this title match. Like, this was...
The fact that it was advertised on a graphic.
Yes. Oh, well. Yeah. Yes. That it's, and this match is happening tomorrow night, which I didn't even realize until Sino pointed it out. This show is airing on Max in the U.S. Triple
I didn't know they had that deal.
I didn't know that either, but yeah, it's on Max tomorrow night. So it's actually a pretty noteworthy show for Triple A, for several matches that are on that card.
So does that relationship continue? Like, beyond?
I have to learn. I literally, until Sino pointed out, I had no idea this
programming. It would be very interesting that, like, you know, on Max you could watch both AEW and potentially WWE own Triple A.
And then our final segment, Cody comes out, crowd is singing for him, and he explains that after WrestleMania, he went home drinking, and he asked someone close to him, "Was I a good champion?" They told him, "Yes, you were a good champion." And
I wonder who this friend is. Like, he made a pretty big deal about this being a friend that he'll constantly turn to for advice. So QT. I wonder if there's a future. QT. Arn. It's got to be Arn, right?
Yeah.
No? I don't know.
Maybe it's Arn. Yeah. So he says that, you know, there was a lot of things I thought about. He goes through his feuds with AJ, with Kevin Owens. He thought about his boss, who sees something in me that even I don't. And I thought about the final boss and how he wants my soul. And he mentions this line, "No matter how many times I say no, the offer still stands." That was an interesting one.
That's ominous and not put in there without a reason, right? So they are revisiting the soul storyline.
Way looking forward to it. as the man has told us many a time, just enjoy the ride that The Rock is taking you on. Okay.
Yes. Okay. I'm enjoying it.
Yes. So he said, he goes on to talk about that the answer is no. And he then also thought about John Cena, and we get dueling chants. Cena forced me to make a choice at WrestleMania, and I hesitated. And Cody is partially to blame if John Cena ruins pro wrestling, but says, I will never hesitate with you again. And your expiration is not after the number of days you have left. It's I am your expiration, and I'm going to, quote, burn your ass. So I think we have our stipulation for the farewell.
An ass burning?
Yes.
Okay.
Then Cody. Match. Sure, I'd love it. Cody says, I have a surprise for you tonight. And the crowd starts to yeet, and he says, you seem hungry. Maybe we should yeet. I was like, that's the lamest thing he could possibly say. Oh, hold my beer. It's June on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are going through tons of your questions on the Ask Away Mailbag Show, and we're bringing you not one, but two editions of Rewind Away, including a review of the Katsuyori Shibata documentary, California Dreamin', covering his time as head trainer at the LA Dojo. Plus, Karen and Bruce have you covered for New Japan Dominion. Chris from LA has chosen another musical edition of Rewind Away to join Wei Ting and Nate Milton. Plus, we have extended editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown coming at you every single week, along with all of your weekly favorites. It's postwrestlingcafe.com. Jay comes out. This took forever to come out. He goes through a commercial break, come back, and Jay's music gets cut off by Cena's as Cena comes out and calls this pro wrestling's biggest wannabes in reference to Cody and Jay. Cody wants my fame. Jay wants my money. And he says there's only one other human in WWE that embodies hustle, loyalty, and respect. And he's here tonight too. And out comes Logan Paul. And dude, he gets into the ring, and there's like 3 minutes left in this show, and Logan just decides to give us the Gettysburg Address after being inspired by Anarchy in the Arena with the Young Bucks. He says how Cena puts over Logan Paul, who does WWE better than anyone else. And people came to see the two of us. I guarantee no one bought a ticket to see Logan Paul tonight unannounced. Paul then insults the stupid people of Tennessee. This is a moment in history, getting to see us together. So the crowd starts chanting, shut the fuck up, as Netflix goes nuts. Logan says, this made no sense if you're someone just swooping in to watch pro wrestling and be like, this is the world champion, and I should be standing next to him as a world champion too. I was like, this just underscores how stupid it is that we have two world titles. But yeah. We understand. He says, I should have left Saturday night's main event with the belt. But Jay, you got lucky. You needed Cody. And the two of you are handed everything. You're Nepo babies. Me and John are self-made men, which should be their tag team name for this week.
The Nepo babies.
Yeah. The Nepo babies. Cena is the last real champion, and I'm the inevitable champion. This also makes no sense. Cena's threat is, I'm going to take this title away, end the lineage, and no one will be able to follow me except this guy that I'm endorsing. So this is all very confusing that Cena has an ally now. Jay says, we don't have to wait till next week. And Cena and Logan start arguing about leaving or not. And Cody asks if Logan is going to go polish his peacemaker.
This, I mean,
this was a clear nod to classic John Cena awful comedic lines. You like this?
I thought it was fine. I mean, I was a big fan of the show. Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah. Well, the fight begins. There is a super kick, disaster kick combo to Cena, getting rid of him. And then Cody, who has probably seen this up close and personal in the past, has to duck a snapshot lariat. And then we got just this horrifically messed up super kick where Logan was like right in Jay's face and Jay had to extend his leg for the super kick. And that leads to the Cody.
That was more offensive than anything.
Yes, Cody holds up Cena's belt at the end. And that's how we end the show. Listen, I understand we have star power here. I have no interest in this tag. I shouldn't say no interest, but if you're telling me, like, I am not that interested in this tag match next week.
Yeah, I don't know if you're so alone there, John. Like, I feel now the sentiment for WWE going too in on this, like, celebrity type of stuff is reaching a bit of a sort of boiling point, you know, at least for the type of fan that just prefers, you know, wrestlers wrestling rather than having a Logan Paul or even this version of a John Cena be so sort of front and center. This is, you know, definitely what the TKO MO is, right? Like, I think I was most curious to see if Travis Scott would be inserted into this. And at least we could tell at this point, I don't think that's the case. But that doesn't mean in the future he won't be. But yeah, it's there's a very clear distinction now between like a WWE main event scene, which involves, you know, a John Cena, who's very much at this point more sports or entertainment than he ever has been, with a Logan Paul, with a potential, you know, Travis Scott. And what's going on in AEW with a Will Ospreay, with a Hangman Page, with a Jon Moxley. And it's swinging the tides towards AEW, at least for like the niche, you know, hardcore fan that much more. So I don't think you're so alone in that feeling.
I mean, I just even rushed. I felt like Logan and Jay was nothing special last week. You know, Cena and Cody, like it's got the story behind it. But just for this tag match, it just feels very throwaway to me at this point. You know that Cena and Cody are going to be locked together throughout, I would say, most of like Cena's run at this point. Like, Cena should not be losing this belt anytime soon.
I think that's the problem. Like, yeah, it's at the point where it's sort of hard to see Cena losing it to anybody except Cody, right? The fact that Cody held up the championship at the end here suggests to me that they're going to go to that rematch sooner than later. Doesn't mean Cody has to win it off of Cena, but
I don't think he can. They're going to do that at Saudi, like, I would even argue, like, I'm of two minds because, like, I don't know. To me, it's like a lot of the luster of Cena, and this is maybe more just personally because I don't, like, we saw this Saturday night's main event number. Cena is a big deal. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The heel run is not doing it for me. And I think, like, the luster has kind of come off of it at this point. And this really does feel like one of those, like, it's a transition show for Cena. Like, this isn't one of the big matches, but this is probably the main event of the show next week.
I mean, it still feels big because, like, from a TKO perspective, and you can maybe argue from like a bigger audience perspective, you're getting the combined sort of superpowers of like a Logan Paul with a John Cena, right? What, not to mention a Cody Rhodes and a Jey Uso, who's also very hot. So I think it makes sense to put into a main event slot, or just even as like a top billing type of slot for Money in the Bank. And I think it'll probably generate like decent amount of buzz, but
you could also do something very consequential, like Cody does beat Cena in this tag match, like that.
You have to do something. Yeah,
they don't have to do anything. They could easily have
Travis Scott will come in and cost the baby faces the match.
That's not out of the round. Like, if you are eventually building to something with Travis Scott, yeah, that
there are no stakes here for like that will like change as a result of Cody pinning John Cena. So that's absolutely what they should be doing, right?
And if they do that finish, then I think like you almost have to go to that pretty soon at that point. Like, that could be Saudi Arabia. Like, you do need something big for Saudi Arabia.
I mean, I could really see it at this point. But I like this is a main event that fits the TKO playbook, and you can argue fits it too well, because I can definitely see some audience backlash for this sort of thing at this point. But if we're just grading this by like, hey, like how many social media views will this have had? How much traction will this, you know, have as a trending topic? I mean, this was a successful, you know, segment, right? So the Cena like promos continue to feel to me like they are so over the top. Like,
yes,
I'm playing a bad guy.
Yep.
That I give Cena a lot more credit as an actor than just somebody who is just maybe unintentionally doing that. It feels to me like it's deliberate, right? The fact that he's just...
And the audience sees it. Like, this is not like hatred this audience has for a heel. Like, it's not even... Like, honestly, a Cena heel run, I think you would hold it to the level of, like, Rock last year in the lead up to Mania. Like, that's what this character should have elicited, where Rock is super entertaining. Deep down, the crowd does love him, but they were really engaged with him as a heel, and that sparked, it worked well. This crowd, like, they do not, I think the novelty of booing Cena is out of the system, and I think it's like, we know we're supposed to boo this guy, but it's...
I think they're still into booing him, but I think they're into booing him because, like you're trying to say, like, they know it's part of the show. They don't truly hate John Cena. And I also wonder, like, again, I give Cena a lot more credit as an actor than maybe what others would, but, like, I think he's deliberately doing it. He's deliberately giving us this sort of wink, wink, I'm a bad guy type of performance. And I guess I ask why. And I wonder if, like, he still maybe feels a concern for, like, the children audience that he doesn't want to traumatize too much. Like, this is the level of a villain that you can still kind of, like, show a child to tell the child, hey, look at John Cena, our friend, pretending to be a bad guy. Isn't this, you know, still fun to watch? Like, I wonder if there's any thought in that. Or it could just be a bad performance. Could be that, too.
You know what I think?
What's that?
At the end of the day... Let us all remind them that The Rock is the final boss, thinking 20 steps ahead. So the best thing for them to do is to know their role, shut their mouth, and enjoy the ride that The Rock is taking them on.
I wasn't fast enough on the draw earlier.
King of the drops, John Pollock. I love it.
Maybe Dwayne comes back at the Intuit Dome next weekend.
And then he'll just go away for like... 2 years.
Well, that was SmackDown, folks. Good show, bad show, great show, best show you've ever seen.
Again, like I go back to like what I was discussing at the beginning of like Double or Nothing. I don't judge this show the same way I judge an AEW Dynamite. Like, I feel like they have very different aims. The aim of this show, yes, it's to, like, entertain us with pro wrestling, but it's also to show us like star power and just like spectacle and just like quote unquote moments. And in that. To that end, I thought this was a successful show. It gave you star power. It gave you, like, you know, something that's supposed to feel big, I guess, to a greater non-wrestling context. Did it deliver a satisfying pro wrestling show? I enjoyed the three-way matches for Money in the Bank. I think those continue to turn out really well. What else we got? What else do we have to talk about?
Those were the main matches for me. I mean, I didn't... My only complaint, I thought it was too short myself, but they could have tacked on some time. That would have been nice. It was a fine show. I'm looking forward to these Money in the Bank matches. Like, I think they're building up to be who do you think qualifies on Monday on the men's side?
Well, let's go through like who's qualified so far, because one slot remaining, but in the men's match we currently have Solo Sikoa, LA Knight, Penta, Seth Rollins, Andrade, and either CM Punk, AJ Styles, or El Grande. Considering Gable's already wrestling the afternoon prior, maybe we can rule him out. Although, like, Gable...
For his sake, I hope they do. I mean, that guy...
Although Gable in there with Penta, like, kind of makes storyline sense.
It's not out of the question.
But Punk being in there with Rollins also makes a lot of sense as well, right?
Yeah. I feel that... I feel you want to have Punk on this big show. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's the Intuit Dome... You have the Rollins program. It's one of your big stars on the show. That would make the most sense.
Yeah,
I mean, if I go Punk.
Yeah,
I think that is the play to go with Punk. And yep. Vekker seems the obvious for the women's side. So,
oh yeah, so in the women's we have Bliss, Roxanne, Rhea, Julia, Naomi, and either Stephanie or Liv or Ivy Nile. Yeah, probably. Stephanie.
No, that both matches are going to be very strong on that show.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to say goodbye on the YouTube channel. We've got your calls and feedback coming up next. Again, we'll be live Monday night immediately after Raw here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. Hit subscribe and you can join us. Whole XL edition of the show, news, review, feedback, and questions coming your way on Monday night. And it is a brand new month beginning on Sunday. PostWrestlingCafe.com. We will have our whole month's schedule out for you over the weekend as well of what you can be checking out on the Post Wrestling Cafe. But part of your subscription comes with the XL editions of all the shows we do after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown each week. So goodbye on the YouTube channel, and we continue on for those on the Post Wrestling Cafe.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.